waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
So Donald Trump tweeted out on November 30th, great reviews on the USMCA, so much better than NAFTA. And look, as I've been saying, you know, this is Trump and the Republicans taking NAFTA. It's theirs. It's their baby now. They've renegotiated it. It's all on them. I do find it interesting that, you know, again, you know, not factual, but he's saying that the USMCA, the Trump version of NAFTA, is the largest, most significant, modern, and balanced trade agreement in history. No, it's not. But, you know, hey, you know, I guess for a good pitch man, and he is, what do you expect? Anyway, well, let's find out what did we get? What do we know? What don't we know? Or as, you know, the LA Times said, he said, she said. I've asked Dan Maurer to come talk with us. He's a legislative representative with the Communication Workers of America. Dan, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So any idea what we got? I mean, you know, I'm reading the side-by-sides of what each statement from the Chinese and from us, and I don't see a lot of cohesion.
Yeah, I'll tell you. There's a lot of nonsense flying around. That's not new. That's not new either to this administration or to the world of international trade. The one thing I'll tell you is, to be quite honest, the fundamental problem that we know with our international trade system is that it's set up to help corporations move money and production and jobs wherever it's cheapest, which usually means where they can exploit workers the worst. And that's certainly been the fundamental problem with NAFTA. You've got workers in Mexico doing really complicated work. Maybe they're at a customer service call center rep, or they're doing, you know, sometimes building a jet engine, making $2 an hour, or sometimes even less. And that's because, right, this won't be a surprise to you, but it's because they can't organize. Less than 1% of workers in Mexico are in real union. NAFTA has done nothing to fix that. And I'll be honest, there's some pretty good provision in terms of what the rights say on paper in this new agreement, NAFTA 2.0, as we're calling it. But there's no real way to enforce it. We can actually credibly believe they're going to be held accountable for any violation. And so I think that's the fundamental problem we've got. On the other issues, it's a mixed bag. There are some provisions we think are real improvements around the rules of origin, around that limits some special rights to a special justice system for multinational companies. But there's other areas like on prescription drugs where it's actually worse. So it's really a mixed bag overall.
Well, it's like anytime you open this stuff up, I mean, there's going to be a hit and miss on a lot of stuff. But, you know, you talk about the labor provision. And look, you know, on paper, you're right. That wouldn't be a bad thing. And maybe we could enforce it here as well.
Yeah. You know, that's obviously a huge problem. You know, one thing that CWA and all, I think pretty much every union is demanding of the new Congress is that they pass some labor law reform to ensure that if corporations interfere with workers' right to organize, that they be held accountable in a real way, and that there be real teeth to our labor laws. To be honest, this isn't gonna do it. There's the whole process we use is this convoluted process that unions or worker advocates have to go do a lot of research and file a case. We wait and send over to the U.S. Trade Representative, and we've had experience with this for 15 years. It just sits there.
Yeah.
So we end up with a report. Corporations get reparations when their rights are violated.
No, and again, it shows, you know, how far the pendulum has swung to one side. And look, you know, that's where the campaign money's at. So, you know, that's where the money's at. So it's not surprising to me.
I don't think it is. I think when you heard the first announcement from the Trump administration about we're going to negotiate a new NAFTA or many of other deals, you mentioned China. There's a lot of deals. There's these big, grandiose promises. Well, then when that runs into the reality of what happens when the multinational corporations that are making so much money off of this rigged system object to it, a lot of that falls by the wayside. Let me give you one example, is on the issue of Buy America rules. A lot of our trade agreements, including NAFTA, give waivers to Buy America rules, right, which make it easier for corporations to move jobs wherever. And Trump made a big pitch to that he was going to fix that. Instead, what we're left with is pretty much what we started with, the original NAFTA. And that's one of those things that I think would have gotten fixed had it not been for the big campaign money. But the big donors certainly didn't want that provision. And at the end of the day, they won out.
And look, if you don't have equal seats, and I was told, look, there were some labor representatives who did get to sit and you know, follow the whole process. There were some. But when you're heavily outweighed by corporate interest and special interest lobbyists, I mean, it's not surprising you're going to end up on the short end of the stick.
Yeah. I will tell you, in all honesty and fairness to them, we got better access at CWA and several other unions as well than we've had in past trade agreements. Of course, those trade agreements haven't worked out for us either. The one problem is that our real power as the labor movement doesn't come from me or some other staffer in D.C. Right? The power comes from our membership. And so whereas a corporation's power doesn't, that's not from their membership, that's coming from their checkbook. And so one or two people in D.C. know about something, they can make sure to get that checkbook activated.
Right.
We can't activate our membership if only a couple people get to know about it. So it still leaves this power imbalance when it's not negotiated out in the open.
No, which is why I think it's important that, you know, we have folks like you on to talk about what, you know, this stuff, because look, you're working this stuff intimately daily. It's what you do. And, you know, look, I hear what Trump's saying, and I hope he's telling the truth. I hope this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. I hope this is, you know, everything that, you know, they're promising, and China blinked, and, you know, all of that. But the reality is, you know, it's going to take a year, two, five, to find out if any of this was what it was, you know, pitched to be. And in the meantime, you're still losing jobs. You're still seeing massive inequality. You're still seeing wage suppression. You're still seeing all the horrible things that working people go through.
That's exactly right. And I think if you look back at the original NAFTA, when you heard promises of millions of jobs, right? When you let when China was allowed permanent normal trade relations into the World Trade Organization, you again heard promises of millions of jobs. But by the time it became clear that the opposite was happening, that you were losing hundreds of thousands, if not millions of jobs, and that there was really a lot of downward pressure on wages because workers were getting pitted against each other, saying, if you want better wages, you want affordable health care, you want a secure retirement, well, then guess what? We're going to move your jobs overseas where we don't have to give those things. You know, that's the reality we came across. But it was several years too late, and there's no way to simply turn back the clock. And that's why I'll tell you, the labor movement as a whole, we're taking this agreement really seriously. We're not just giving up on it. We're saying, are there ways that we can fix it? And we're going to fight till the end. We're not going to just say, you know what, forget it. We'll hold accountable, like you said, in 5 years. We're trying to get it right from the start.
Well, now that, you know, come January when the Democrats take over at least the House, there is an opportunity to have some leverage because this agreement still has to pass through Congress.
Oh, definitely. And I think, you know, it's going to be a little bit things are going. We don't know yet who's going to be in charge of the trade committee in the House, which will be a big difference. There's a real fair trade champion from the state of New Jersey, Bill Pascrell, who was the ranking Democrat this Congress, and we hope he stays. But there's some more corporate Democrats who are kind of angling for that slot. If they use their leverage right on labor rights, on prescription drugs, on Buy America, on a couple of these key issues, I think that Trump really wants to win. I mean, I don't know that he's that committed to every single detail, but he wants a new agreement signed.
Yeah. But do you think he? Do you think he? There's anything in the agreement that he knows? I mean, and I hate to say this because this just sounds, you know, kind of condescending. But do you think he knows anything about the trade agreement whatsoever? Because, you know, I agree with you. He wants a win. That's really all he wants. He wants the party. He wants the celebration, the signing ceremony. You know, he wants the, you know, the picture taking. He wants the pomp and circumstance. I don't know that he's a details guy. I don't think. I don't know that he knows what's in any of these agreements.
I mean, that's hard to know. It's hard to read his mind. I will tell you, the U.S. trade rep Bob Lighthizer is an old steel industry lawyer, so I can tell you he does know this. But yeah, you're right. It's a little bit hard to know where to put your pressure point if you can't make a sale to him on the actual factual details. Right? It's more about who won, who lost, and that sometimes is not that's not the best setup for making good policy.
Yeah, I mean, or who got the most retweets? I mean, I'll tell you, that's really not a good way to run a government.
You'll have no argument from me there. I think a lot of times you'll see that the rhetoric doesn't match the actual policy details. You know, if you look at the tax bill that Republicans passed, you know, it was supposed to create all these jobs, and then you look at a company like GM. Laid off 14,000 people, or announced they're going to. That's we think, in large part true because that new tax bill creates a lower tax rate for moving jobs overseas. Yep. AT&T, one of CWA's main employers, has also laid off thousands of people. It's just been a little bit slower. So when you look at these results, it shows why you need someone who's paying attention who will make sure that the policy actually helps American workers.
Yeah, I mean, the territorial tax idea was a terrible idea.
There's no question about it. I mean, it's simple math. It's cheaper to do work overseas than it is to do it here. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy the policies that we've allowed to go through. And at the end of the day, you know, you're right. We've ended up losing millions of jobs. And this continual spiraling downward of what was once the most prosperous working class in the history of civilization. So, you know, in looking at this, because as you've pointed out, and aptly so, you know, the power in this country is with the membership. While I would argue, and I used to say this all the time, the wealthy have all the money. We've out-procreated them. You know, how do we use that power of numbers?
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, I think one of the most important things is for people to do a lot of education in their communities, because a lot of times people are hearing a bunch of junk news on right-wing media and stuff like that. That's anti-worker stuff. But I think the other thing about it is, you know, we are in a time when a lot of workers. I think even if they're not, maybe even they've never been union members, they're realizing, look, you read every single month, the unemployment rate's down, the stock market's up, everything's going great. And that's not matching their lived reality, right?
Right.
When if you're only making $9 an hour while you're hearing how great the economy is, that creates an opportunity where if you get together with everybody else who's in that same situation, right? And no one's going to be happy with that, and everyone's going to want their reality. And so this is, I think, a really, now that you see a lot of awakening, people need to exercise it and get together, organize both in their workplaces and in their communities.
Look, I've been waiting for that, you know, that big wave of people saying, you know, we've had enough already. We're taken to the streets, and it just hasn't happened yet. I'm still hoping, but I come back to these trade deals, and you know, this is one of the main drivers. This was one of the main drivers of the 2016 election. This to me is one of those moments where it's a put up or shut up thing, and what Trump's getting away with, I still think, is a lot of overpromising, a lot of, you know, pitchmanship. But I still fear falling short of actually accomplishing much that's going to help the average everyday worker.
Yeah, I mean, I think the good news is that there are a lot of people who now have more power in Congress who have been working on this issue for quite some time. You know, Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio, he wrote literally a book called The Myth of Free Trade. He's been a champion for fair trade deals that treat workers equally with corporations, and now he's going to be a little more empowered. You've got a lot of people like that who are really have thought about this in real ways and have thought about what are the policies that we can advance that will put workers first. And so people like me who are in D.C. and hopefully people who are workers throughout the country are telling those folks, like, look, this is a big deal because we're not going to get a lot of shots at this. It's not like if this fails or if the Congress passes this and it doesn't work, it doesn't bring jobs back, it doesn't raise wages, we're not going to get another shot in 2 years.
No, no.
Right? This has to work or it's going to have long-term harm for American workers.
No, you definitely need to get this right. And we need to get it right now, which is, again, my biggest fear of having someone like Trump in the White House is, you know, I'm a supporter of tariffs and the idea of trade enforcement. I'm a supporter of, you know, renegotiating these things. But, you know, when he starts doing it, I fear he boogers it up and we don't ever do it again.
Yeah. I mean, that's a real concern. And that's part of why what we are advocating for is that whenever you've got something, you've got to make clear what your strategy is. When you're jumping around from one thing to the next, you know, the corporate interests and powerful interests around the world, everybody has a strategy. And so if you don't have a strategy and all you're hoping for is to declare a deal at the end of the day, that is unlikely to get the kind of long-term results that are really beneficial. So that's we've seen that problem with some of the trade issues with China, where there's announcements of tariffs and then something, oh, well, we have a magic deal, and then it turns out not much changes. That's been a recurring problem for this administration.
I mean, for me, the first thing Trump should have done is kept his campaign promise and labeled them a currency manipulator on day one. I mean, that I think would have done more than any of, you know, the angry tweets or any of the, you know, the threats of tariffs or any of that stuff. And then, you know, start holding them accountable. And I would argue, as Rob Scott over at EPI has pointed out, we need to devalue our currency a little bit to attempt to level the playing field.
Yeah, it's kind of a perverse thing. One of the other results of the tax code and a lot of his other policies has been actually increasing the value of the dollar. And that change, it sounds good, but then it makes our products more expensive on the world market. It makes products made in other countries cheaper by comparison.
Yeah.
So if we did something about currency manipulation, and again, if we did stuff about more serious enforcement of labor rights so that then we're competing on a level playing field, I think that would do a lot to both stop the outsourcing of jobs and deal with the downward pressure on wages. But unfortunately, while there's been a lot of attention paid to a lot of other things, those issues have basically been MIA from their agenda.
Yeah, well, look, we've never really been high on their priority list, so I'm not surprised by it. So overall, if you had to give it, you know, kind of a gut feeling, was this a good weekend for trade? Was this something that moved us in a right direction, or is it like, who knows?
You know, I think as of right now, it's not all that different from the status quo. I think we're going to keep pushing hard on that. We've been very vocal about that, and you've probably seen a lot of fair trade politicians, a lot of unions have said, look, this isn't going to do it, but let's sit down and get this right. And hopefully those people have a lot more power come January. So that we're keeping, otherwise I think this won't make the kind of transformational change that we're looking for.
Yeah, we'll see how it plays out. As it continues, we'd love to have you come back and share some thoughts and keep us up to date on what you guys are working on.
That sounds great. Thank you so much.
Dan, I appreciate it. Dan Maurer, legislative representative there with the Communication Workers of America, CWA. You can check out their website, cwa-union.org. We'll get links out at thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
10% of the people.